34. On the Absolution. The door to the Hux suite slides shut behind him, and Cardinal feels truly adrift for the first time since his mother died on Jakku, leaving him entirely alone. Ever since Brendel found him and gave him a purpose, something to aspire to and something to believe in, he's known that he was right where he was meant to be. The stars felt more like home than the hovel of salvaged metal where he grew up. But now the halls of the Absolution seem cold and impersonal, and he can feel the eyes of every security officer watching him through the cams that blink at regular intervals. Up here, among the officers and the elite, his every move is monitored. The dark room in the bilge where Vi waits now feels less like a prison and more like a haven. Still, he has his duties and they won't wait. The spy will. She has no choice. And if she tries anything, Iris will take care of her. The droid is beginning to feel like the only member of the First Order that Cardinal can actually trust. All this time, he thought Armitage was an ally, or at least a bastion of shared loyalty to the First Order. But as he's recently learned, the younger Hux is just as dangerous as Phasma. Cardinal's training kicks in and his posture straightens. How did the rhyme go? Chin up, shoulders back, stand up tall, don't be slack. Even the tiniest of his recruits can sing along, and the slogan is printed on one of the many posters plastered around their barracks and the youth cafeteria, along with an image of Captain Phasma at attention, her chrome armor shining and her cape rippling behind her. The little ones look up to her, want to be her. They think of Captain Cardinal as their teacher, but it's Phasma who has become their idol. They'll be waking up shortly, the klaxon calling them out of their bunks, where Brendel's carefully designed program feeds them subliminal messages all night long. Recognizing the value of the system in molding young minds, Armitage has changed nothing about the program since Brendel's death. Cardinal finds it comforting, when he checks on the children at night, to hear the soft murmur of the First Order's doctrine droning on, the same as when he was a child. He used to lie in bed and pretend it was his mother's kind, loving voice, even if it spoke of loyalty, courage, and the rule of law, all things his mother never mentioned as she struggled to keep them alive. In his own quarters, Cardinal shucks his armor and hangs it neatly, noting a few smudges from his time with Vi. There, on the glove, where he spilled some calf. There, on the shin guard, a stain. He didn't even look in the mirror before confronting General Hux. He's slipping. He goes through the standard ablutions taught to him when he first came to this ship. The right way to shower, the correct way to clean his teeth and shave. His new bodysuit waits in the closet fresh and sharp, but he won't put his armor back on until it's clean. As he polishes the shining red, his thoughts drift to the day he received his first armor, the standard white trooper suit given to every recruit. Back then, he was just a boy learning to fight, and his number was CD-0922. He was so proud as he accepted the helmet and learned the subtleties of keeping a tidy kit. Standing there with his first platoon, chin up and shoulders back, a training blaster hooked on his hip, he'd never felt prouder. Brendel's hand had landed on his shoulder, and at the time, it felt like the highest he could ever rise. He'd aced every sim, mastered every weapon, won accolade after accolade, and left his platoon behind to help a less accomplished platoon find their feet. Brendel had called him a natural leader and lauded his patience and composure when teaching even the clumsiest or most nervous recruits how to shoot a blaster or wield a riot baton. He never lost his temper or had an unkind word. He took each new challenge in stride and enjoyed the process of finding ways to reach the unreachable, soothe the unsoothable, and boost the confidence of the insecure. In the early days of the First Order, there had been more of these negative traits, back when the recruits were all teens who arrived damaged in heart or mind. Once Brendel had perfected his methods and found younger children to indoctrinate, there were fewer such duties for Cardinal. He was able to focus on weapons and running the elaborate sims programmed by both Huxes. There were many fine recruits, but in the end, Brendel chose Cardinal above all others for this responsibility. Out of thousands upon thousands of troopers, it was CD-0922 who was called to lead and given the high honor of acting as the personal honor guard of Brendel Hux as they refined the training program together. The first time Cardinal saw the red armor was when Brendel Hux presented it to him in a ceremony in front of thousands of his fellow troopers. Although CD-0922's helmet had shown only the smooth white face, inside, he'd been incandescent, joy beaming out of his eyes and stretching his smile to unseemly proportions.
"Thank you, sir," he'd said.
Brendel had looked at him then, well, like perhaps a father would. Which was a way Brendel had never looked at his own son, Armitage. Cardinal recalled one conversation in particular, once he was considered a trusted part of Brendel's life and long before Phasma came along. Brendel had been preparing for a big meeting with Grand Admiral Ray Sloan and the other leaders of the First Order. Well, the first set of leaders. Cardinal was waiting in Brendel's suite, the very one where Armitage was now staying, and Brendel had poured his customary glass of port from a crystal decanter and offered a glass to Cardinal.
"Thank you, sir, but it's against regulations," Cardinal said.
Brendel had smiled that smug but indulgent smile he used only when he was in the best of moods.
"Ah, CD-0922. So upright in your red uniform. That's why you're first among my men. Cardinal, even."
He laughed at his own joke.
"How would you like to have a name other than a number? Captain Cardinal has quite a ring to it, does it not?"
It was an unusual honor, and Cardinal's heart had swelled.
"As you wish, sir." "That's what you always say. I wonder what you would do if I, as your superior officer, insisted you share a drink with me. Would you honor your First Order teachings, or follow my direct command?"
Cardinal had flushed under his red helmet, panicking a bit. It was as if two thoughts were running through his head, separate but opposed, and neither was stronger than the other. Brendel poured a glass and held it out, but Cardinal didn't reach for it.
"I'm sure it is against your orders to invite me to go against regulations, sir,"
he finally said. At that, Brendel had thrown back his head and laughed.
"Good answer, Cardinal. More for me, then."
The older Hux had swallowed both glasses happily and gone to his meeting in good spirits, Cardinal walking before him, blaster at the ready and captain's cape flowing behind him. When he'd served as Brendel's guard, he'd always felt larger than life, untouchable and grand. The red armor, Brendel often reminded him, invoked power. Out of all the identical troopers, one had risen above. One had flown higher. Cardinal was to be more than just a stormtrooper, the highest of the stormtroopers. Hence the color. Hence the unique name. Cardinal for the Red Bird, Cardinal for his standing as the first of his kind, the first trooper with a name and with red armor. And then Phasma showed up. She never had to give up her name for a number as Cardinal had. She didn't get red armor, thank goodness, but it was obvious that Brendel considered her special, too. Given a captain's cape early in her career, the only one other than Cardinal. Offered the chance to mold the training program to her specifications, to program the Sims, and find new ways to challenge the teens who'd graduated from Cardinal's own curriculum. It had seemed, well, he felt guilty for even thinking it. But it had felt as if he did the heavy lifting, primed the pumps, and then she took his perfect troopers and twisted them to suit herself. The more he thinks about it, the angrier he becomes. It's unclear whose work is more important. They are two halves of the same whole. When the troopers perform ideally and are triumphant, it's considered a joint victory. When Brendel had stood before the assembled troopers to report a job well done, Cardinal and Phasma had flanked him to share in victory, and now they do the same under the new General Hux. But for all that their lives are intertwined, Cardinal has never known Phasma personally. At all. He has his academy on the Absolution, and when he deems a platoon ready, they get shipped off to Phasma's academy on the Finalizer. even though he's the one that trained her, teaching her the intricacies of the First Order and even how to read, he still knows virtually nothing about her as a person. She has always shunned small talk. One thing he does know is that Phasma memorizes her troopers' numbers. He once considered this a sign in her favor, an attention to detail that shows how much she cares about her responsibility. But now, he sees everything she does in a more sinister light. Cardinal learns the troopers' numbers because he is proud of them and enjoys seeing them succeed. Perhaps Phasma keeps track of the numbers in case she needs to make someone disappear. Like Frey, her own niece. As these thoughts stream through his head, he polishes his red armor to a high shine and goes through the once comforting ritual of getting dressed. The klaxon blares, and he hears the sounds of footsteps and shouting. Brendel offered him quarters among the officers, up high where Armitage now stays, but Cardinal chose to be here, near his charges, acting as a living example of his service and modesty within the First Order. At first, being so near the chaos of thousands of children irked him, but now it feels like home. Listening to them now, even filtered through his helmet, he smiles. These children will one day be the greatest fighters the galaxy has ever known. But just now, they're jostling for showers and toilets and measuring their hair to make sure it's trimmed to regulation length. He gives them time to dress and get their breakfast before checking his reflection in the mirror. The outside shell doesn't show the cracks within. Perhaps this is a crisis of faith, but he will perform his duties. If nothing else, they give him time to decide what to do with the Resistance spy. It's too late to tell his superiors about her, to admit that he's been secretly tracking her and has her locked up on a ship, all records of her presence cannily erased by Iris. But it's never too late to kill her and kick her body out of an airlock, distasteful as that seems. She is an enemy of the First Order, after all, a member of the Resistance. Her intel on Phasma, while elucidating, isn't enough. When the time is right, Cardinal stands to go. But before he leaves, he turns back. His quarters are spare, nothing like the glowing elegance of the Hux suite. Growing up on Jakku and then sleeping in the barracks, he couldn't get comfortable on the soft mattress Brendel had originally supplied with his captain's commission. Now his bed is a spare thing, matching his equally austere furnishings. There are no rugs, no art, no cut crystal decanters, no softness or color here. Just a few hard, basic chairs and a small table, strangely similar to the room where Vi waits. He kneels before the table and pulls out the single drawer. The box inside seems so childish in his gloved hands, the wood simple and rough, cradled in the shining red. He slides back the lid to reveal the only remnant of his life before the First Order. It's a small and inelegant carving of a Happabor. Long ago, Brendel told his child army to bring nothing with them, that the First Order would supply everything they needed, become father and mother and employer. But a young boy named Archex smuggled this lone object in the pocket of his fatigue pants. His father had carved it, his mother said, when she was pregnant. A gift for the son he never met. At the time, the boy had thought himself very brave and reckless. For the first few years, he'd taken great pains to hide this artifact, feeling guilty and worrying that he would be discovered. But now, looking down, twisting the Happabor between his gloves, he just feels very old and very conflicted. He realizes, suddenly and with great emotion, that he has never killed anyone unless directly ordered to do so, while Phasma has killed many. Every time his platoon was sent planetside, he did his duty and followed orders, so he's never considered it a problem. His superiors have never questioned his performance. And yet, does he have what it takes to be that ruthless? Is this why he holds back with Vi? Is he the one who's really the rot in the heart of the First Order? A knot of weakness amid strength? No. No, that's foolish. Taking lives unnecessarily doesn't make Phasma strong. He drops the Happabor into the box, gently places the box back in the drawer. Here is evidence that he, too, has been imperfect from the start. His first response to the First Order's kindness was rebellion. Their main difference, it would seem, is that Phasma is willing to do anything and kill anyone to get what she wants, and he's happy to do as he's told and be satisfied with what he's been given. Or at least, he was. All this time, he's been pressing Vi to give him the intel in time for the assembly. It's so rare that General Hux, Phasma, and the other leaders are all on the same ship. More and more these days, it seems as if everything of import happens on the finalizer, while the absolution fades from consequence. Although he was invited to attend, Cardinal wasn't even informed of the meeting's purpose. It could have been to discuss something sweeping like planetary occupation strategies. But deep in his heart, he's always worried that he'll lose yet more responsibilities, whether to Phasma or another trooper. Everyone in the First Order has a job, until they don't. Cardinal was looking forward to presenting his case and watching Phasma as the truth was revealed, but now he dreads attending at all. Without Armitage on his side, he needs more than just stories. He hurries from his room and walks down the hall to the cafeteria, glad that the children within won't be able to see him sweating thanks to his helmet. The door opens, and every face turns to stare. As one, they rise to their feet and salute, their small faces earnest and their black uniforms spotless. Cardinal faces them, forces his chin up, and returns the salute. When his arm goes down, they stare for one moment more before returning to their food. Their chatter is much quieter now. No one would dare utter a harsh word or do anything remotely raucous while Cardinal is watching. He knows every face here. Knows every number and every childish nickname. He's tucked them back into their bunks when they had night terrors, calling out for parents they'll never see again. He's placed their fingers on triggers, taught them how to squeeze just right. He's given them stern looks of disappointment and doled out their punishments. For 15 years, he stood here, looking out at a sea of faces, everyone reflecting the boy he once was. Boy or girl, tall or short, light or dark, brave or clever, these children are him. And they are his. For the first time, he doubts why he would ever hand them over to a monster like Phasma for safekeeping. His children! She turns them into monsters like her, doesn't she? Killers without conscience. It makes him sick. But he can't let that show. Not when there are thousands of eyes watching. Following his usual pattern, Cardinal walks up and down the tables, calling out to this child or that to ask about their training, compliment their scores, or point out a belt buckled backward. When he reaches the food line, he's the only one there.
"Good morning, Captain Cardinal,"
the droid says.
"Will you be having a standard breakfast?"
"Yes, and a prot snack and extra calf, please."
His tray is different from those sitting in neat rows before the children. Their meals are perfectly designed for their ages, genders, weights, and nutritional needs. He suspects that other chemicals are included to keep them healthy and boost any vitamin deficiencies they might have had growing up on rough planets. Their food doesn't taste good, but hunger works wonders for the appetite, and the children are worked hard. His food tastes no better, but it's all he really remembers. The calf, at least, will help him stay alert. He had been on his way to sleep when Iris informed him of the capture of Vi's ship, and being awake this long isn't helping his mental state or his jitters. Cardinal takes his tray to a table set perpendicular to those of his recruits. His place is always left empty, whether he's there or not, and surrounding him are the up-and-coming leaders in his program. He sits and looks around the room. There's no choice but to see the posters of Phasma watching over the children like some great silver goddess in a cape. They don't see a monster, though. They see a hero. A tall soldier looking toward the future, her cloak dramatically outlining her shining chrome armor. The black eyes of her helmet reflect the stormtroopers they will one day become. They see what they're meant to be, what they might be if they work hard enough, if they fight well enough. They long to be molded in her image. He never noticed before how very many of the damn posters line the walls. It's like he can't escape her.
"Good morning, sir,"
FE-1211 says. She's his brown noser, but she always scores highest on intelligence testing and has a mean eye with a blaster.
"Did you sleep well, sir?"
This from FB0007, a serious child who'd love nothing more than to supplant FE1211, but can't quite outfox her.
Yes, thank you,
Cardinal says. As he stares down at his plate, he realizes he'll have to take off his helmet to eat, and then the children might be able to see the mental war he's fighting writ in the lines on his face. The third child, FM0676, just stares at him, her dark eyes as hard as a mask. She's the one to watch, he thinks, because she's the one who's always watching.
I've a meeting today. Do your best. I'll check your scores tonight. As you were.
He stands, picks up his tray, and forces himself to walk slowly and with gravitas back to his room, where he rips off his helmet and wipes the sweat off his face with a cloth before eating. The food sits in his throat and he forces it down with the calf. It does no better in his stomach, where it roils like a stone ball and threatens to come back up. He can't cram down any more protein, so he pockets the extra packet and chugs the calf, wishing it were easier to get his hands on the real battle stims handed out to troopers when they're training in sims and later fighting on the ground. He could use an extra boost just now. The stuff he gave to Vi is child's play by comparison. When he stands, his legs tremble. The ship, once so solid, feels like it's shuddering all around him. He should be overseeing the children's training, but he can't stop worrying about his little project downstairs. If some random trooper assigned garbage duty for the first time becomes lost and stumbles onto the spy, Cardinal's entire life will be destroyed. The odds are impossible, but paranoia doesn't care about odds. Clever as Iris is, she's not programmed to deal with that. He flicks his comm to contact his closest colleague on the ship. If Cardinal has a friend, it's SC-4044.
SC-4044, I'm feeling a bit off today. Run the program as usual. Let me know if there are any issues. Put FE-1211 in the rear flank and see what FB-0007 can do with his own platoon. Going to medbay, sir?
He pauses.
It's not that bad. Did you finally hit the cantina?
Another pause.
Something like that.
He mops off his face again before putting on his helmet and heading out. He's never felt claustrophobic before, not about ships and not about his helmet. But now his helmet feels like it's made of lead, like it's pressing down, making him shorter and smaller and stupid. He can hear his heartbeat in his ears, smell his own sour breath laced with calf. When he checks his image in the mirror by the door, he can't help staring. This is him. This is Captain Cardinal. This is the leader of the youth training program, once Brendel Hux's right-hand man. He is polished perfection, upright strength and courage. He is the second most important trooper in the entire First Order, and he now knows that the number one trooper isn't what everyone thinks she is. He has done the right thing, reported malfeasance to his superior officer as outlined in the First Order laws, and in return, he has learned that a murderer walks free among his people, given the highest honors above him, her actions supported by those who should be punishing her. And the only thing he can do is go back to a resistance spy to see what other orts she will throw him in a bid for her freedom. He's out the door and storming down the hall, his steps echoing, when he nearly bumps into a figure coming around the corner. It's Captain Phasma.
Pardon me, Captain,
she says, her voice as cold and clipped as ever. For a moment, Cardinal can do nothing but stand there and stare. Her chrome armor is as well polished as his, her armor weave cape equally long and impressive. She's taller than him, but he's more muscular, and although he's never seen her face, he imagines a twisted and feral visage torn by scars. Something more akin to her Parnassian mask, fringed in feathers and fur. His hands ball into fists. His right one uncurls and his fingers dance over the blaster on his hip. How he'd love to kill her, right here. Kill her and tell the truth, not just to Armitage, but to the entire First Order, to Wren and Snoke and anyone else who will listen. He could produce Vi Moradi, could go back to Parnassus and bring back Siv as a witness to Phasma's character. He'd bring them dozens of beetles. He could get rid of this monster once and for all. He wants so, so badly to kill her. His entire body trembles. He's so close to doing it. One shot and all his problems would disappear. But he doesn't pull his blaster. In the end, he's utterly incapable of going against his strictest order. Just like with Phasma's old Skyr folk, there is to be no infighting among troopers. It's one of the first things they learn here.
Captain,
Phasma says when he doesn't move or respond.
Pardon me,
he says, glad for the helmet's voice modulation. He steps around her and hurries away without looking back.